Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, the podcast that is saying its long, final, heartbreaking goodbye. It's not really heartbreaking. It's just we're ending a great run.
Yes.
And much like the movie, The Long Kiss Goodnight, which is 68% fresh on the tomato meter, this is just going to be a fun, rollicking episode where we get to look back on some of the great movies we've talked about, some of the amazing guests we've had, the wonderful team that has made myself and Jacqueline Coley look like we're good at this for the last three, four years. That is Jacqueline Coley. And Jacqueline, you and I have been on this ride for so long, and it's just been such a rewarding feeling to get in here to the studio, whether it was our personal studio at home, whether it was on the other side of town, whether it's here, and get to just do what we love doing, talk movies with each other.
Yeah, it really has been nice to just, I will say this, I'll be happy to see you now in a more like intentional social setting, because it was sort of like, I know everything going on with Mark because I see him every other week or every week. Now it's like, we can go back to those days where we were like, we got to make like a, not an Arcolite date, I guess now it's a, we got to make it an AMC date, but we got to like make an intentional thing to hang out. It'll be nice to put our friendship back to the way it started, which was me going and visiting you on the patio of the Comedy Store.
Yeah, well, you know what's going to be really fun about that is that you're always welcome on the patio, but we're probably, the next time we see each other, because we just went over our travel schedules, as Jacqueline and I like to joust with our frequent flyer miles.
Yes.
The next time we see each other, I'm going to put money on it right now. You know where it's going to be?
In an airport lounge.
It's going to be us walking the dogs to the coffee shop.
Yeah.
That is the median between our two places.
Fair.
Because it's happened before. It's happened a number of times.
I've seen you walking your dog. I think you've seen me. Mm-hmm. And that is actually true. We got to get the dogs to do a little like little play date. Just like the 40-somethings that we are.
I don't know that Molly loves a good play date. I think she enjoys hanging out with other dogs, but she's just kind of like, all right, you run around and do your thing, and I'm just going to sit here and take a drag and take a nap, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, and my dog will be like, no, we're not going to take that energy. We're going to have to take it to a 10. Because, like, he's chill inside the house. You get him to a dog park, it is in the streets, as we like to say.
I love it, man. I love it. And that's sort of the energy that Jacqueline and I bring to the podcast, these divergent approaches to life. And it just all meshed in Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong in the most beautiful way, where we got to welcome on so many special guests, some celebrities, and we got to talk movies and basically defend a movie if we thought it was wrong by the tomato meter, or take a movie down a peg if we thought it's a little too big for its britches up there on the tomato meter. And one of the great reasons that we wanted to do a farewell episode is because it's not just you and me, who we're still going to see each other all the time.
Yeah.
But it's this incredible crew that surrounds us that really helped get this thing off the ground during the pandemic. And so joining us today is a number of special luminaries. The first one of which is, you know her as Producer Lucy. And my first question to you, Lucy, is you did not come up with the name Producy Lucy. That was actually like what either Jacqueline or myself
I messed it up,
tried to say it really fast.
I said Lucy, Producer Lucy, and I accidentally said Producy Lucy. And I was like, that's absolutely going to track now. And it works. And it stayed that way. And I think it's all encompassing about that. A mess up leads to a happy ending, like a souffle.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. You told me on one episode, I have something to share with you. So the following episode, you said it, and I remember grinning like an idiot. I was like, I love it so much. How did I not figure this out before?
I think we got a text on the group text. It was like, thank you for my nickname. And we're like, you're welcome.
Yeah, sure, I guess.
I'm easy to please.
Yeah.
It's good to be here with you guys. I think, you know, during the pandemic, I'm a producer. I don't edit, which is rare for our team. Normally, it's producer, editor. Mm-hmm. And so my boss at the time was like, we don't really have anything for you to do. And I was like, here we go. I'm going to get the, like, it's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
or you
got
to learn how to edit.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I tried.
Yeah.
On the early episodes, I did edit those. And it took me a week.
You got to learn Final Cut Pro.
Yeah. Thank God
Avid,
for Brian Perez,
things.
Honestly. But ultimately, they were like, we need a podcast. So it turned into it went from scary to like, oh, hell yeah, this is going to be fun. And it was. Yeah.
And then it was during the pandemic, so you had to get me away from my busy Wii Golf schedule, and we had to make sure that we could do this thing virtually. And so I really think, and that's what we're going to do today, is just kind of go over some of our favorite episodes, some of our favorite moments with some of our favorite people. And I think that what I loved about this podcast initially was just that Jack and I were already great friends. We knew each other. And so it's very tough to have chemistry with anyone anyway, even if you're in the same room with them. And to be virtual and just to do it over the web, the World Wide Web on the information superhighway. It's like, I don't know this person, but Jack and I already got along. So I don't think that was ever like even an issue for us.
Yeah. No. And I would say I've done this with people that I didn't know as well. And it was like I already knew we were cool, but I became incredibly grateful when I realized, oh, thank God I'm here with somebody that's going to be like calm. And honestly, look, 3.5 years ago, but really I give it the 4 years because, man, did we like pilot and pre-production and like just like getting it through all of the corporate sort of like loopholes we had to get it through before you guys finally got that episode on September, because we were workshopping this before the pandemic started. We were first talking about it in like January.
Okay, so I repressed all that stuff from my memory because
I did not.
I looked at the date.
It's with you still. She's lies awake at night going,
As Brian always does a wonderful job with the show notes, I'm looking at it, and it said that we premiered 3.5 years ago on September 17th, 2020.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm like, I thought we started earlier than that. And I guess we did.
A year earlier, right?
Almost a year earlier was the first conversations, and then we got in with the folks at Art 19 and everything like that. But I remember we did our first, I would say, like pre-production meetings while we were still in the office. And so that was before March. That was before we sort of like closed down. Because I'll never forget that day. Everybody was like, yeah, we'll be back. And like everyone left their desks like normal. Like they didn't undo them. You know what I mean? Like everything was just the way that it was. And I was the first person to be like, we're not coming back.
I held on. I was like, please God, don't let this be a thing. I kept telling everyone no, because South by Southwest was coming up and we were going to do a big show. And I kept telling everyone, no, it's not. This isn't a big deal. Everyone relax. This isn't real, because I really wanted to produce the show.
But you're also,
and
I found this out about you today, and I've known this about you for years, and I get reminded every so often, you love coming to work. You love getting into the office.
Oh, yeah.
And you love the FaceTime, and that's where Lucy thrives.
Yeah. I need people.
What's going on at home?
Yeah. I have children. This is a vacation. I like hanging out with you guys more than
Fair.
No, I love my kids. But
I mean, but you definitely should leave room for the love, as they say.
Mm-hmm. People always say, how do you do it, Paul? How do you work and have kids? I'm like, because you have the kids and then you have someone watch them and then you get to do the fun movie and TV stuff. Like Rotten Tomatoes is so fun to work for because we get to do this.
Yeah,
let's talk about movies.
This is fun.
And it's fun to talk about movies and have the angle, not just like, oh, I love this part or I love this part, but like, why is this movie perceived this way by the masses, or particularly by a wealth of critics who watch a bunch of movies? That's their job. Why did the wide swath of critics feel this way about a particular movie? Is there a movie, Lucy, that you can look back over our past 3.5 years and say, like, were you surprised by anything? Was there even just a movie that, like, you were aware of and you looked it up for a possibility to be on the show and you're like, I can't believe it's that high or it's that low?
The two that stick out to me are The Mummy and Spaceballs. So those episodes I loved being a part of those, just from the behind the scenes angle, it did shock me. Because in the 90s, Mummy came out in 1999. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I remember being a kid, and that was such a huge film. And we would like play that game after we saw the movie. Like, it was a big deal. So when I found out it was rotten, I was like, what the hell? This is so strange to me.
And we had our friend Eric Striffler on for episode.
And he had the shirt on.
He wore his Mummy shirt. Yeah. And ever since that episode, that's a pretty big one in my history too, because ever since that episode, I never noticed the Mummy fandom before we did that episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Striffler's great at just gushing about the stuff he loves, which is in abundance. Yeah. And ever since then, I'll see like a car with like a bumper sticker that says, I still defend the 1999 Mummy. And like, I see all these and I'm like, where are these things coming from now?
Yeah.
Now I guess my antenna's tuned in to look at all the Mummy references that people put out there in the world.
Oh yeah.
Especially the bisexual awakening. That's like a key one.
Yeah.
That, like, everybody talks about is like, this movie gave me my bisexual awakening. Yeah. I don't know if I have.
Oh, because of Rachel Weisz?
Both of them. Because it was like people were attracted to both.
Brendan
both
Fraser.
Her and Brendan Fraser.
And Rachel Weisz. And I'm going to throw.
Yeah,
I'm tossing Arnold Vosloo in there too.
Absolutely.
Ooh, yeah. And
absolutely.
His little soft. That's what we talked about. His soft, his soft dad bod. Is
perfect,
kind of sexy.
Bald
what,
head.
What is the name of the guy? He was also in Lost and he plays the guy that like rescues them. He's like the leader of
Yeah,
he's another one. Like,
yeah,
that movie is just
daddy.
Like bangers of hot people. The girl that plays Knox in a Moon, another one.
Yep.
Paz Vega.
L'Oreal model.
Absolutely.
So basically, if we go to a party, we go to like a cast and crew party celebrating the 1999 film, The Mummy, whoever we go home with from that party, we're going to have a good time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think that's absolutely
true. We're
going to
have a great time.
Yeah.
It's hard not to fall in love when you're watching The Mummy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remembered very little about that movie other than that was the practice movie for me because it came out a few weeks before The Phantom Menace did.
Oh.
So my brother and I went to the theater to see The Mummy because it looks like a cool movie, but we're also looking around. We're looking like, okay, this is the theater where Star Wars is going to be happening.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's the
big
best
deal.
Seat? Where should we, like, what's the best angle? What's the best snacks to get? How early do we have to get here? It was training camp for Star Wars Episode One.
I would hope so. I mean, that's not saying something, though, for knowing that he was really, like, preparing to go to war is what you should have been doing because that's what it ended up being. I will say this. I was thinking about this question that you asked her on the way up here.
Yeah.
And it's on like two sides of it. I still to say, and granted, this is actually a testament to the show. I still to this day cannot figure out why people went in on the Eternals the way that they did.
Oh.
Like, I just watched it the other day on Disney Plus, and it's not a perfect movie, but I compared that to like Madam Web, and I'm like,
you're like, excuse me.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, or comparing it even to like some of the more earlier iterations of Marvel, like, I can't understand how that movie was so low.
There's so much good acting in it, too.
Yeah. I mean, like, even, like, The Dark World, which was, like, barely rotten or barely fresh.
Yeah,
like, the fact
right.
that this movie is considered infinitely worse to that one, which, like,
That's the fun of this show, too, is that you take movies that are all in the same franchise,
right.
and then you start comparing the tomato meter against each other. Because it's like,
you
look at something, you say, how is that lower than this?
Yeah.
Right. This like, makes no sense. How is Paddington? Was it Paddington 2's like 100 and Citizen Kane? Oh, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
That's one of the all-time great tomato meter debates. Is Paddington actually better than Citizen Kane?
Listen, as our second guest today, I think we'll attest to that. One thing I learned about this show.
He can correct us.
He will. I can already feel it. I literally can. It is a snapshot. And the snapshot is much more of a reflection of the times. It's much more a reflection of the taste of the times. And the taste of the times are not meant to be progressive. It's not, if a movie is going to be a movie that the next generation loves, the current generation is probably not going to dig it in the same way. And there's like countless examples of that. You know what I mean? Like even something like Goodfellas that like the people of that time appreciated, but they didn't love it the way it ended up being this sort of like cultural shift in cinema the way that we did.
Right.
Like,
no one knew when Goodfellas came out, nobody was watching that movie. And they said, oh, this is it. I mean, they watched and they said, this is another great Scorsese banger. But nobody said this is going to be on cable every weekend for the rest of cable's life.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go to every streaming platform and people are just going to watch this movie nonstop. People didn't know. It's like there's an alternate universe where we're doing that with Dances with Wolves.
Yeah,
instead. Oh, Dances with Wolves is on. I can't go anywhere for the next 3 hours.
Nothing against Dancing with Wolves, but think about the cultural significance, the impact, and how often you think about a movie like Goodfellas or what it means to the zeitgeist. And think about the last time. The last time I probably thought about Dancing with Wolves is when they put it on the trailer for Horizon. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
he made that too. I forgot that he made that. I forgot that that was a thing because that and Last of the Mohicans and Braveheart, those were all movies of that time.
Have you guys ever noticed with those films, especially Kevin Costner films, which I love you, Waterworld, but like anytime he's like,
that was your magnum opus episode.
Was
when we did Waterworld.
Every time I go to Universal Studios, I see that show 2 to 3 times.
Wow.
That is a family favorite. But Kevin Costner, love him. But also, Dances with Wolves and other films that he's in, I'm always like, why is there a 7-hour sex scene in this? He's always like, and then there will be a sex scene and it will be very real. And
I think
they edited it out of Field of Dreams when he hooks up with Shoeless Joe for 10 minutes.
That
in the cornfield.
Best comedy bit that I've seen in years was Mulaney describing that movie. He has
at the Oscars.
Oh my God.
That was good.
I will say this because he's still my pick to host the night. Like, get more dark with your backstory, dude. It just makes you a better comic. Like, I don't care. Like, you're going to leave this one too? Like, it'll be a great special.
That's what I plan on doing after this podcast. I'm just going to go into a dark hole and just be a filthy heathen for
a few
months.
And then go to rehab, come out, and then you'll be hosting the Oscars.
Now I'm hosting the Oscars. And you're coming with me, Jacqueline.
The student of comedy that you are, I think you can appreciate. It's so much funnier that he uses the actors' real names. He doesn't use the characters' names. It's like you have to actually say Timothy Busfield. You have to say Abby Hoffman because that is what makes it even funnier.
That's what you and I, and I remember Lucy, like we met talking about like, how do we approach doing this podcast? Do we have to say the characters' names? Do we say the actors' names? I think we all just landed on, let's just do what feels natural to us because that's what, more often than not, that's what the listener is doing as well.
Yeah.
Like, if I just said Ray Kinsella, you may be like, wait, that guy, is that Kevin Costner? Is that James Earl Jones? It's like, you have to know who these people are. And so, again, we're doing this podcast for the masses. And I consider myself a member of them. And
exactly.
So I want to be as relatable as possible.
Right.
So sometimes you seamlessly go from saying, oh yeah, Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. But then if we're talking about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, I'm just saying Robin Hood the whole time.
Exactly.
Or the fact that Lucy, I think in the Eternals episode, only referenced Richard Madden as Rob Stark. We just called him Rob Stark. We didn't even call him by his actual name.
Yeah.
And we also called Kit Harington Jon Snow.
Yeah.
We both of them.
Who's
are
Kit Harington?
They just are their character names. But
I know not.
But that is the beauty of the show. Yeah. I think that's the beauty of our audience because I don't think, look, they went with us on that one. But I'm going to ask you, what was your sort of like disbelief pick?
After watching Sister Act 2, I could not believe how it was that low.
Yeah.
Because, like, I had seen it, and then I just completely kind of forgot about it. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, it's another nice entry in whatever this is going to be. And then to see it was, like, 17% or something when we did it. And I was like, what is... Even if the movie felt like it was just like another sequel to crank out, like there's nothing about that movie that should be anywhere close to that low. And it has since rebounded. And that's another one of the fun things about doing this show is you kind of get the word out to the masses like, hey, maybe we'll get some fresh perspective on this and maybe even turn a movie from rotten into fresh.
But ultimately, the tomato meter is living. It moves with the times.
It's a living, breathing
thing. It's a living constitution like the British, you know? And I think that's pretty cool. I also remember the Blacklist guy.
Franklin Leonard.
Franklin Leonard, I think originally Joel Mears, who had been with us, he was our editor-in-chief back in the day, he was talking to Franklin Leonard and was like, you have to come on and do Sister Act 2. And he was like, no, I know a lady. Her name's Maikiko James. You got to get her here. She was a great guest. I just remember being like, I really like, this is a fun podcast. This is fun.
Yeah, because the idea was percolating before that moment, but that movie was just sort of the perfect movie to encapsulate what we talked about, this sort of idea of like, hey, this is a movie that there's still a lot of conversation around it. Is it worthy of being canonized? Is it one that people didn't give it its fair shot for whatever reason? But the thing I also sort of loved about the podcast is just like the site and just like the tomato meter, it's matured past that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're at a point now where it's like, yeah, the conversation is a part of it. But the more interesting thing is, well, why was it like that? Why was that? Like when we look back on the 90s and how maybe sex was very prevalent in society. Comparing that to now, where you every movie looks like a Leave It to Beaver episode, that says more about
it
says more about the sentiments of the times. Because I will also add that I felt I held it down for the horny people on this podcast, and I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. I read romance, and it's like I don't care because being thirsty on Maine is your God-given right.
Do you remember the horniest episode? Like for you, what was, I forget what movie it was, but there was one where I was like, holy shit.
I don't. They all kind of bleed together that way because that's just, that's sort of like the white noise of my existence is.
I feel like Jacqueline was really in her element. To her and Steph Sabraw talking about Twilight.
This is true.
Because, and I give Steph a lot of credit because she's sort of like, sort of it enlightened me to a different way to look at Twilight. Yeah. She's like, Mark, you can't watch this as the dude that you are.
Right.
It's like you're watching this movie and all these like crazy cuts and like things they're doing because it's from the perspective of a very like scatterbrained high school girl who's going
it's
through a lot of changes.
It's a 13-year-old girl that wants a boy to bite her. Like, come on.
Ooh.
Like, this is a different vibe. But I will take that vibe every time.
Yeah, so. I want to get more movies from both of us that like we're like, oh, that really was like kind of either changed my tune or something that we kind of dug our heels in. But we do have other guests coming in today. Lucy, before we say goodbye to you for now, I wanted to kind of give you the floor to, you know, kind of give us your closing sort of thesis about what the show has been and what it's meant to you, because you've been such a wonderful producer for us, and there's no other person that I think could have gotten this thing off the ground the way that you did, working in concert with Joel and with Jacqueline and myself. It's just that you did an incredible job, even though you had to do the majority of it from home, which we know you hate being in.
Yeah, I do. It was hard, but I just want to say, working with you guys over the last 4 years, you know, it was a dark time, as we all know, but I got to know both of you better. I know we had ups and downs in terms of just production and like everyone's feeling it. But this was a light, I think, even for me in my day, to be able to just sit for an hour when we started recording, to be able to connect over things that humans in general, we love watching movies. So to be able to talk about that for an hour once a week was like, it was very meaningful to me. And you guys killed it. And I think you guys have grown tremendously. And it's been a total honor. And then I also just want to give a shout out to our fans. I read a lot of emails. And we have some incredible fans, you know, Philip Calderon, Daniel Kessner, all these people that they were in our comments. And thank you.
The fresh ketchup crew.
The ketchup crew. You guys were the heart and soul, and you guys loved Jacqueline and Mark, and it just felt like a family. Mm-hmm. So I thank you, and I love you.
Aww.
And have a nice life.
But there is one more thing we need you
to
do, because if you're a listener to the show at all,
you may not know this.
You've heard the voice of Producey Lucy on every episode, even after she was no longer Producey and she was just Lucy, or Luce Magoose, if you know her really well.
Yeah.
You've heard her on every episode. And I guess to help introduce our next guest, Lucy, you have the floor.
Two men's with Tim.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
With that introduction, he's got legs, ladies and gentlemen, and he's sitting down for...
He's a real person.
He is a real person. He's not just a voice.
How's he's not some AI that we plug in and we say, hey, tell us what the critics were saying at this time when this movie was released. He is the wonder kind, the uber collector of data and reviews here at Rotten Tomatoes, our expert review curation manager. Tim Ryan is in studio.
Yes.
Thank you so much for that intro, you two.
You have such a soothing voice when you're talking about the time, and it's almost like I'm sitting on your knee and you're telling me about a simpler time when this movie was released or back in the 80s or whenever the movie came out, and it just gives us such great context for this show. But you were really with us from the beginning. I mean, you were part of this whole iteration of, you know, fertilizing the waters that would become Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was crazy because it was in the midst of the pandemic and we're all sitting in our houses and Joel hits me up and says, hey, we got this podcast. He's like, you're going to hate the title. I'm like, what's the title? He's like, Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. I was like, I hate it. But I mean, and
wait, we have to be clear. This is a man that has lived and breathed the tomato meter, its efficacy, and its like reality for better part of two decades. So.
No, but then, Well, I appreciate that. The part that he pitched it to me was, what's the afterlife of a movie, or what's the extended life of a movie once it's released to, you know, years later? And I was intrigued by that. And that's what sort of got me up in the morning every time we did one of these things. What's really funny is, I wish Lucy was still here so I could say it, but like there were points where there's so few people you were talking to.
Yeah.
And Lucy was like once a week, once every 2 weeks, we would just talk.
During the pandemic, yeah.
For like an hour, and then be like, oh, we got to record this.
Yeah. necessary time. Mm-hmm.
And so we do this whole show, and like it's almost like I'm, you know, tossing up the tennis ball and then one of you shows up and hits it, but it's not, you know, that's really a tribute to our team. And I got to give it up to Brian too, because if you listen to the very early episodes, I am totally freestyling. And Brian was like, dude, this is going to go a lot quicker if you write it down. So then I was like, okay, I listened to a bunch of NPR and old episodes of Pauline Kael, and I was like,
he has a very NPR kind of soothing voice.
Dulcet tones, man. It was comforting because you set the tone, I don't think you appreciated, for the episode. A lot of times I would come in with like fire, brimstone, or sometimes just a little bit on the other side being really like, I don't know if I have a strong opinion about this, but you would say a quote or you would talk about something that happened at that time, or you would give us some sort of historical context. You'd be like, oh, I can latch on to this. I can talk about this.
Doing the show is a lot like going to the gym and it's like, you just got to get warmed up. Yeah. So Jack and I knew all we had to do was get to the 2 minutes with Tim segment, because then we turn it over, we get to listen to Tim and the guest is warmed up and everybody's loose. And now we're like, all right, let's go do some heavy lifting here.
You have no idea how much I appreciate that, and listen to you two bounce off each other was just like a delight too. So it's just like, I can't believe we made it this long.
Yeah.
But it's also not just because it was the depths of the pandemic, not that that sounds wrong. I guess what I'm saying is the depths
Any
of the pandemic that like makes it
and
that
look,
long. Exactly,
we made it
right?
4 years total. I'm keeping this 4 years because also April, we're now in April. This will come out in mid-April, and we started in September. That's almost like we're getting close here. You know what I mean? What is that? Yeah. 5, 6, 7, 8, and then that's the 9th month. That's over a year. That's a year and 3 quarters.
And there was a lot of seeds being planted and stuff like that.
Girl. But I will say, have you, for the 4 years that we've had, most podcasts don't make it to 4 episodes. We made it to 4 years. I appreciate anybody that reached out. I'm curious for you, Tim, though. Did you have anybody say anything about Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong to you outside of the walls of Rotten Tomatoes?
My parents thought I was pretty good.
That's a good one.
I like hearing that. And it's also one of those things where, just because I know how precious the tomato meter is in these halls, and that, you know, it was nice to kind of have a wink and a nod with it. But when you're like at a holiday party and people find out you work at Rotten Tomatoes, does it just like, do you just want to go like stand in the corner when people are like, I can't believe they gave Transformers if they don't understand how the tomato meter works?
So this is the thing that I always say is that, sorry to go back to the very beginning here.
Please do.
So I've been working on a project called RT Archives. And the basic idea is going back and finding reviews from when the movie came out. So The Godfather came out on a date in 1972 and people reviewed it. and they gave their opinions, and they had not seen it on cable.
Right,
they had
right.
not. The very earliest review I've been able to find was in November of 1897.
Wow.
What?
For a film called The Horrocks Passion Play. It is the filming of a passion play in purported to be in Germany, although I think they might have fudged it a little bit. And there's a guy, anonymous, for the Philadelphia Inquirer, who writes about going to see this and, like, you know, the pictures are most lifelike. And, like, this is a guy seeing an idiom possibly for the first time.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And though it's not like we're talking like Ebert or Pauline Kael or something like that, but the guy, you get a guy in a room at the birth of a thing.
Yeah.
This guy does not know.
He doesn't know what it's going to become.
No, right. Nor not only does he not know what it's going to become, he doesn't know that like 125 years later, some guy is going to be like, I found this on the internet.
Yeah.
I am going to put it on a website. There's this really funny thing that I found from a newspaper in 1920 where this woman named Harriet Underhill was one of the first regular, a lot of the early film critics were women, by the way, yeah. which is awesome. It's awesome to go back and find these voices that, you know, in a lot of cases, like people don't really know about. And it's been really fun for me to, you know, find this stuff. She was writing about all the hate mail she was getting for disliking, I think, a movie called The Tiger Cub.
Oh, wow.
Which you will never see because it burned up in a fire at some point. Like, it's a lost film.
But people seem to love it.
But people at the time were writing her nasty letters about, how did you like this but not like this? So this goes back to, like, 1920?
The dawn of the internet trolls.
Yeah. I found a review, I found a poem written to a film critic for the now-defunct Chicago Examiner newspaper, dissing film critics in 1915.
Yeah. You hear that, trolls, with your ridiculous comments.
I've seen this poem.
And your misspelled words and your horrible grammar. Back in the day when they were trolling people, they wrote poems about them.
Yeah,
write
that's
me a
right.
poem
that's
trolling
right.
me and I'll be happy.
No, that, whenever, because I think you sent it to me via Slack one day, like this poem, and whenever anybody really comes strong, I was like, I literally tell them, it's like, I really appreciate you for upholding a tradition that has been going on since 1915. And I show them this poem, and I'm like, this was somebody doing a more eloquent version of what you're doing right now.
Right, yeah. right.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that it's really funny because I think one of the episodes we talked about this was Hook.
Yeah.
Because I remember being of a specific age in 1992. I was 15. And I remember, like, I would just started reading movie reviews. I just started paying attention to film critics and, like, the occasional, like, article about productions and things like that. And the general consensus among the grown-ups was that Hook was this total, you know, disaster at the time. That, like, you know, it was a troubled production, that, like, it was, you know, it squandered its star, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. Even Steven Spielberg seemed kind of not thrilled with it. I was not those kids who watched it on VHS over and over, who were just a few years younger than me. So even my perspective in 1992, those kids in some cases were like pre-critical. I'm not saying they're unintelligent. Of course, these are like smart, observant. But even kids a couple years younger than me, their experience with that film was totally different. So now they are like, what? Hook? We get more stuff about Hook than just about anything else. People love that movie. And I'm saying just a little bit older, that was not well considered at the time. But those kids weren't reading reviews at the time.
Yeah.
And so there's things like that that it looks obvious in retrospect, but, like, even at the time, there were slightly different vibes happening, you know? So
what was the, was that your movie? Was that kind of your gateway into, like, film criticism, into being like, oh, this is actually something, this isn't just to sit back and eat popcorn. This is something you can actually digest and sort of reconcile with your own feelings.
Let me tell you what. My dad had a book of Roger Ebert reviews that I would just, like, read over and over. Like, and then I would get a new, because he would update it every year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, so that I would just, like, go through those. I think I remember reading, like, his rotten review of Batman and being sort of confused because I thought everyone, like, it made all the money.
So
you know what I mean? I just thought everyone just loved Batman.
That,
and then, like, and
the
in
Ninja Turtles movie. I was like, everybody loves this, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. Even today, like, ultimately, by the way, I don't think that there's ever that big a disparity between critics and audiences. I think for the most part, if you look at the most popular movies of all time, the movies that, like, if someone says, this is my favorite movie, it's usually something that but critics and audiences sort of agree on.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I think for the most part. But I will say that it's those cult films or those movies that, you know, people saw a lot as kids before they were, you know, before they were reading movie reviews or absorbing the culture beyond maybe their houses or their friends or their communities, that those are sort of the interesting things.
Well, the thing that, I mean, you know, you talk about the advent of film criticism in general, but then when you talk about the tomato meter, what have the changes to the tomato meter been that you've witnessed before this podcast? And then like during this podcast, has there been any movement on? I mean, I'm curious as like somebody who kind of knows the inner gears. Like, yeah, like I look at you, you're kind of like Hugo in the Clock Tower, and like you know how all the gears turn and like all that stuff. So I'm just curious from your perspective, like how has the tomato meter sort of evolved?
Okay, wow. So yeah. Excluding After Darks and excluding the time we did like all 12 Saw movies or whatever.
Yeah.
54 films changed tomato meters during the course of before it was published.
Wow.
And some of these are, I have a reason for some of these. Like, for example, when The Dial of Destiny came out, I went back and cleaned up all the old Indiana Jones things. So Kingdom of the Crystal Skull went from 78% with 273 reviews to 77% with 308 reviews, because I found a bunch of reviews from 2007.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what we do when we go back and clean these things up. The thing is, a lot of these things, the points are not, it doesn't move that much. But The Last Dragon went from rotten to fresh, for example.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's not just me going back doing it. Like, we approve a whole new list of critics every year. And one of the things that I love about the tomato meter or Rotten Tomatoes is that it all goes in the pot. It doesn't matter what country, what time period, retrospective, contemporaneous, it all goes in the pot, which sort of can show how a movie was perceived over a long period of time. And The Last Dragon is one of those movies I think people were like, interesting when it came out. But again, people love that movie. The other thing about something like The Last Dragon is one of the things that's been kind of fascinating and wonderful to watch over the course of working at Rotten Tomatoes is just how many more women, people of color, LGBTQIA+ critics there are who are in the pool of critics now.
Yeah.
Because something like some of these films that got mixed reviews in the 80s, there weren't, you know, like the audience.
It didn't reflect the audience.
Exactly,
at all,
right. So it's not just people watching movies when they were kids. It's also, you know, like Black people watching Coming to America. It's not to say that like these are bad critics who didn't like it or whatever. It's just that
it spoke to them differently.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
there's
exactly.
A very big difference between, hey, this joke is going to land a lot better for Mark because it's a joke about Van Halen.
It's going to be a lot more sensitive.
Yeah, I mean, but if it's a good joke about Van Halen, you're going to laugh even.
I appreciate it in a different way.
You appreciate it in a different way. And so for you, the sort of like ability to make a joke about your favorite thing in a way that you still find funny is going to be infinitely more impactful than for me, where I'm like, unless it's about Hot for Teacher, I don't even know. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where beauty is sort of in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that, you know, the way that, one of the things I love about Rotten Tomatoes is that, and the wide swath of critics that we now have that are reviewing all these movies, is that it does enlighten you to, as anybody who's consuming art, to kind of try to look at it from your perspective, but also try to get outside of your own box and try to look at it and see what the movie is saying and who it might be saying it to.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very important thing that I don't know if it was always prevalent in film criticism. I think back in the early days, I mean, you're talking about some guy in 1897 is watching, like, they don't even know what they're looking at necessarily yet.
Yeah.
And so this whole thing is an evolution and is still an evolution. And to have people like Tim Ryan in a place like this that are charting that evolution and sort of like, it's almost like you're looking at a growth chart, you know, you're looking at a chart of evolution when it comes to film criticism. And that's why you have somebody who has really found their calling, I think, in somebody like Tim Ryan. And it was a pleasure to have that 2 minutes every week that sometimes was 3 or 4 minutes. And it could have been 10 minutes because it was great for us to give perspective. And it really kind of lit a fire under Jacqueline and I to be like, all right, we got to follow this now. Like, this guy's bringing facts. This guy's bringing quotes. We really got to up our game for the main conversation.
Just can't be vibes.
I,
yeah.
You know, and I appreciate both of you very much. And I thank you for all your kind words. There was this one that I did specifically for you. Specifically. And that's when, like, I was like, I am not, no disrespect to the Mighty Ducks. Like, I have very limited things to say about these movies that got middling reviews and that audience scores are not particularly high either. So I was like, you know what? Let's throw the whole thing out and let's try to find movies, sports teams named after movies. And you were like, what about the Predators? And I'm like, I don't think, no, it's a...
The natural predators, it's a thing.
Anyway.
The White Sox were named that before Field of Dreams?
They were named Field of Dreams. There was that whole scandal.
Yeah.
We appreciate you here. And there is one more question I have to ask you just so we can clean everything up. Is Paddington 2 better than Citizen Kane?
Okay, so here's the deal.
This is literally like asking a Vietnam guy about rice patties. Like, what are you doing?
So I'll just say this, that like during the pandemic, like I said, I've been doing this thing where I've been going back and finding reviews of old films. And during the pandemic, we had so little contact with the outside world. Like, I'm in my basement. You know, adding these reviews for these old films. And I just was like, oh, that's interesting. Someone from the Chicago Tribune didn't like Citizen Kane. Huh, I guess I'm adding that. I didn't think to, like, contact PR.
Oh, I remember that too,
Because then all of a sudden, it was shortly after the Oscars, someone tweeted out, like, oh, looks like Paddington's 100% and Citizen Kane is 99%. And I'm like, okay, also, this is not how this works. It's not, that doesn't mean it's... It's a percentage of critics. It doesn't mean it's better.
Oh, man, but it was, everyone got in on that, man.
Yeah,
everyone got in on that. Even the director talked about it. Like, this was national news.
I will say, Paddington 2, delightful film.
I'm not, no, and like, this is ultimately the thing. Like, we're talking about Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. We're talking about scores and things. It's all part of a discussion. It's all, you know, hopefully that it's a jumping off point. And if you don't agree with critics, like, see why you don't agree. See why they said what they said. I think it's just, I often, when you say, think about being cornered at a party or something like that, I'm always, like, my default is, like, always defend film critics because they're watching something for the first time. They don't know how you're going to react. They don't know how you're going to react.
They're watching it before they even get a sense of how the general public's going to feel about it.
Exactly.
I think the thing that you're really driving home here is that, it is nice to have information and it's wonderful to have resources where you can investigate the stuff you love or the stuff that you're curious about that you'd know nothing of, but have some confidence in your own opinion.
Fair.
You know, keep your memories, cherish them. I remember being in a theater and laughing so hard at Naked Gun 2.5. And that's why I'll say that's the best of the Naked Gun movies. Is it in the general public's eyes? Probably not, but
I think it's fresh.
It's the funniest. It's the funniest one to me.
That's the smell of fear, right?
That's the smell of fear.
That's not the final insult.
It's not the final insult. That's 33 and a third. So, yeah.
I love those movies.
You have to remember.
They're great.
What is that judging on? What are the critics judging it on? And what are you judging it on?
Yeah.
You're judging it on an incredible fun day at the movies. The critics may be judging it for a whole host of other things that you could give a damn about. I don't care about the cinematography. I want to ask everyone this one last question because we didn't get to a lot of things on the podcast, as I'm sure when we talk about our final mailbag, there's some movies that we didn't get. One that you wish we would have gotten to that you would have liked to have seen.
Oh, man. If there was one that I just think that we really could have gotten deep into this conversation, and this is such a small movie that people may not even remember it. I looked up because I wanted to watch it. Eddie and the Cruisers 2, Eddie Lives. And
really?
Yes. And because it's almost impossible to find streaming or anywhere. And I was like, man, this thing's got to be like 10% of the tomato. It's got to be 5% because, you know, just nobody really cared about when it came out. But I loved watching that movie. And I looked it up last night. It is 71% on the tomato meter. So you're damn right, Eddie Lives.
Tim, do you have one that you wish we would have gotten to?
Ishtar.
Oh,
because
that
was like I said, when I started paying, there was the Far Side cartoon, which was Hell's Video Store, and it was all copies of Ishtar. Like, that thing was so toxic in its day.
It was.
But I went back and read some reviews at the time, and a few people were like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
It just sort of had this terrible reputation, but like that reputation was not like totally universal. And I know Nathan Rabin, for example, went back and rewatched it. He was like, this is funny.
Yeah.
So I think it just cost a lot of money. It had some big stars, like it did. But, you know, again, like who knows who knows how it's gonna age.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's why, you know, we could have just kept doing the show and kept it, you know, featuring stuff like Ishtar and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
but the movie that Jacqueline thinks should have been on the show for one last defense is,
listen, for my horny girlies, we didn't get to 365 days or after. And both of those would have been epic episodes, but I think Mark would have blushed too much.
It would have been an enlightening experience for me. I'm sure.
I would have been me forcing Mark to watch basically softcore porn.
But the knowledge, whether it's a movie Jacqueline wanted to do or I wanted to do or somebody else just said, hey, we should totally tackle this movie. I think the anchor to this show is, as much fun as it was hosting with you, Jacqueline, the thing you could rely on every week was 2 minutes with Tim,
yeah,
getting us on the right track and getting us to talk about the things that are really important to people about the movie and the most important aspects of it. So,
yeah.
Tim Ryan.
Thank you so much. And again, it's so funny to be sitting here with you since you guys spent so much time in my head, in my ears.
Wow.
And so to actually be here is kind of amazing. So.
Yeah, that's why I tried to dress like a radio DJ.
You need like a fruity drink with an umbrella the way you're dressed right now, man. You got your shades like going.
We got Tim and Jack. We're going to be giving away some Fandango tickets later on today. We got Brian Perez coming to the studio next.
This is trippy.
Yeah. Tim Ryan, you're the best. Thank you for everything
you guys,
you've done
for the
show.
You guys, thank you so much, too. Brian, Lucy, everybody, thank you so much. It's been an honor to do it, and thanks for having confidence in me to, you know.
Oh, you'll be back. I don't think this is the last time I'm going to sit across from Mark talking in a podcast setting.
Yeah.
Just not going to be under the Rotten Tomatoes and the wrong umbrella. Leaving one calming presence and bringing it to another one. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I have to let you have a peek inside the hood as producer Brian Perez sits down. I will go ahead and say this. We ran this podcast, but as we said, we started it in the pandemic. And that is sort of like getting a car as it's running and jumping inside of it as it's going downhill. You're not really thinking about what direction you're going.
Nope.
If you're on a road, you're just in it. And when Brian joined the podcast, that was when we finally felt like, oh, no, this is a train on tracks with a time schedule. And like, we're not going to crash. And that calming presence is like what kept us going literally for the past, 2 years, the majority of the podcast. And then also editing on top of that, too. So
yeah,
I will
beforehand.
Say, yeah, like this was such an added thing. And I will say that it's a relationship that I like. It's not that I don't like you, Mark, but it's one that I will continue. Because he produces my he produces my other podcast, The Awards Tour. Like, this relationship was, he was not so sick of me that he decided, you know what? Let's do that girl again. More.
I needed more of that chaotic energy in my life.
I've always
said. I'm too calm. I'm too relaxed. I need stress.
Brian needs chaos.
Yeah.
And Jacqueline needs the would say the structured approach that Brian brings to a professional setting. Now, I would call him our rock star producer, but by the way he's dressed, you already knew that if you're watching this episode.
I had to dress up.
Clean. He's got a growing career in comedy now. He's basically just doing what I do, except he's much better at many more things. So you edit, and you were kind of like the apprentice for a hot second there, and then you took the producing reins and just ran with it.
Yeah, so the history of my history with this company is through Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's weird to think about. I came about in April of 2021 as the editor.
Mm-hmm.
Christian, our buddy Christian Ruvalcaba, was the editor beforehand, but he's like,
I remember that guy.
Yeah, he's like, I don't like editing audio. Like, you're the audio guy. You want to do podcasts? And I was like, okay, what's Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong about? So I came on and Producer Lucy was producing with you guys. I met you guys. I was editing behind the scenes. And then she went on maternity leave and I took over her duties. And it's been fun since.
Yeah. Like, and it's great because you and I have known each other for a long time. And so getting to work with you in a capacity like this and just having somebody to really, because the one thing I think that Jack will agree on that we sort of need is just a little bit of like, hey, guys, let's get this thing done.
Yeah.
Like let's just, I just need an answer on this. Just give me a yes or no. And so, and that's usually all it takes.
But a follow up is definitely good for both of our email activities.
He's a human follow up. That's what Brian Perez is. Yeah. He's a human reminder on your calendar.
Because you don't check email, and I think that I answered and I didn't. And between those two, there's some missives that have to be resent. And that's okay.
I'll email Mark like in a group message, and he'll just text me back saying, like, I don't like emailing back. I don't like CCing all.
I'm not replying all.
And this is the opposite with me. If he texts me, I'm like, who died? Why are you texting
me? There's so many things to keep track of. Like, Jacqueline doesn't like texting. Everything's in an email. Mark doesn't like emails.
Well, this
or
is the
Slack.
Thing. Look at our lives, though. That's look at our lives. True. Mark lives in his text messages with bookers, with your agents, mm-hmm. with whatever.
Yeah.
If it is not in an email, that is gone to the ether. There is no follow-up that will happen when I look. I'm not looking back at old text messages.
No.
Are you kidding
me? No, I get random phone calls from numbers I don't recognize, and it turns out to be Jacqueline on the other end of the phone. And I'm like, how did you, what is this number?
There's
she's
number.
Like, oh, I'm on my fourth phone. And I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
She's what do you juggling want? Your phone.
Listen.
Yeah.
And by the way, she's not calling with an emergency. She's just calling to shoot.
What
the,
are you doing?
You know.
What are you doing? I'm because the only time I can be an actual human being is when I'm outside of Los Angeles proper. Like when I'm at an event, I'll call Mark and be like, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Yeah. I mean, that's really.
I'm walking to a movie. What's up? How's the dog?
Which airport lounge are you in?
I'm about to be in LAX. Listen,
I'm about to be there as of tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow wow. morning, not that yeah. close. No, I'll be there Friday evening heading over. I'm going to interview Zendaya. I'm going to use this podcast. I know this is your moment, Brian, but I will just say this. I'm going to interview Zendaya, and I have kept quiet about this to a level that is not acceptable for me as a black woman.
Now,
like, are you allowed to say that you're interviewing?
Okay. But yeah.
Are
but,
you yeah. now are you apprehensive about it? Are you excited? Are you nervous?
Like,
is it like are
more,
you got a fangirl?
Yeah, I'm way more nervous than you should be to interview a woman who is 15 years my junior. But
yeah,
I
like
just think
something.
Like I
it
do
gets
not
weird.
I think she's amazing. Like mm-hmm. when Issa Rae, who's my age, said to her, it's like, what do you do when you wake up every day and just look around and realize none of these bitches are even close? That's the vibe. That is the vibe. Like yeah. she just does. Like it's like I really appreciate what she does. Nobody's perfect. She is a, you know, whatever. But as far as like putting it out there for black women, like her, Serena and Beyonce, doing great things. Doing great things.
Great.
All right. Follow that, Brian.
As a Mexican, I don't know. What are you doing in the Mexican community? I don't know. Who should I be following?
You talk about like a celebrity that we all get excited to talk to.
Yeah.
And you, one of your many hats that you wore was sort of booking the guests and getting talent in the room. How was that the easiest part? Was that the most toughest? Was that
like
the most
booking?
Rewarding?
Yeah.
I liked going through Mark because you have the connections with everybody. Jacqueline, you have connections as well. But Mark, I love...
Mark's people will show up. Nobody will, like, the people
no,
that... The
Emily V. Gordon, you brought
true,
her on, and
true.
She was great.
Yeah, no, she's true.
And that was the first time I saw or even heard about the legend of Billie Jean, and I loved it.
All of Jacqueline's contacts are on their yacht in the south of France,
they're
unavailable, and they don't have reliable Wi-Fi to come on the show.
They're busy.
My people just wake up and sit in traffic for an hour, and they come to the studio, and they do a great job, and we love them all.
Comedians are better. You got one of my favorite ones. What was his name?
Eric Griffin.
Eric Griffin. Like, that episode will go down in history. Most unprofessional job, because all I did was laugh at that man the entire hour. He just made me laugh so much.
Yeah, we had a lot of laughs on the show. And that's one of the things that is really rewarding for me, is just being able to talk about movies. And that's like going back to the Schmoes days. It's like, that's always the way I love talking about movies, is being serious about your feelings towards a film, but also being able to crack jokes during it. So when you have... You have an EG in the room. You have Steve Byrne, who did Ace Ventura with us.
Yeah.
You have Winston Marshall, who came in a bunch of times. His Avatar episode is way up there for me as far
there,
as like
yeah.
just one of the most fun episodes to ever do. Who are some of your favorite guests to bring
Eric
in?
Griffin was great. I'll go back to that one because when we were recording it, there was a longer episode in there that I was like, I can't put this in the show.
This is an after
this
dark.
Is a, I, like, we're a corporation here, Eric.
Oh
I can't
God.
Include any of this.
But it was so good, though, man, because you still got the vibes of me being like, she definitely laughed for a good 10 minutes about some stuff they cut out right before we cut back to her. So you still get that vibe, even though you didn't hear what it's about.
That's the audio. You should have sent that audio to Christian Rubalcaba. Be hey, can you handle this one episode for me? I'm out of
cover
town.
This, but no, the comedians you brought on, Tony Baker was great.
Yeah, Tony's great.
Tony's awesome,
And actresses like Daniela Pineda was great, talking about The Cell. Like, a lot of fun guests. And when Producer Lucy was in charge, she got on Topher Grace to talk about Back to the Future.
It was fun looking into the mirror for an hour. That was cool.
I was absent for that episode, but I was happy for you. I was very happy
for you. Topher and I got to tackle some subjects. Liv Morgan, the world-famous wrestler, was great. We got to have...
Peaches Christ, which I loved for her.
heard, Malignant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've heard coming on talking about Malignant. Also, yeah, just people that are involved in the movie. We got what's her name from Deep Blue Sea?
Saffron Burroughs.
Yeah, Saffron.
Oh, she was great.
She was so great. Cola from Ted Lasso coming on. I think he did
Bad Boys 2.
Bad Boys 2. Yeah, man. Was it Jay that did Man on Fire? Jay Ellis?
Jay Ellis. Yeah, Jay Ellis did Man on Fire.
I just think that we had like such, I don't know, man, just such a great run of people where I was like very excited to see
Chance
them.
The Rapper doing Hot Rod was
That was pretty sweet too.
Just because like, because for two reasons. One, it was great to talk to Chance the Rapper, but it was also, I'd never seen Hot Rod. And this was the movie that Chance was like, no, we got to talk. This is the movie that I want to defend. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I've heard of it. I like Andy Samberg. Let's check it out. And I loved it. And so now it's like, now I have a new movie introduced to me. Yeah. And even like as one of the hosts of the show, it's really cool. Like The Legend of Billie Jean was another one where I had heard of this movie vaguely. Yeah. And then you sit down and watch it. You're like, this is great.
And I will say, too, towards the end, there were movies that I think were personally ones that we liked that got to be a part of it. Like when you got to do the Goofy movie with Danny, when Andre came in and did
Super Mario Brothers.
He did Super Mario Brothers. Yeah. It came in with the VHS. I was like, this.
With the shirt, everything.
When people
everything,
brought props, I was like, This is going deep in like the best way. I will say somebody we didn't get on who I know is a frequent listener. That's Dan Peralt. Like, we should have gotten... Did we get him on for Strays?
No,
we didn't. This is what
happened.
We were supposed to get him on, Dan, if you're listening. We were supposed to get him on for Strays, but the writer's strike happened, and he couldn't do any press for that movie that he did with Will Forte. Yeah. So, like, he couldn't do anything for that one. But, yeah, he was going to come on.
But the three of us have hung out so much.
Oh, my God,
I feel like we had Dan on the show, like, five times.
But he should have been on here. I would say that's another regretful guest that I wish we could have gotten on here. But we got on a ton.
He would have been great on the Eddie and the Cruisers 2 episode. That we'll never see the light. I'll do it myself. I'll have Dan come over.
You say this, but there is a chance too, and not to like tease everyone, there is a chance we could be back with certain moments and certain specials and like a one-off kind of thing. If there's a movie that we feel like there's a good conversation around it, because we covered a lot, 165 movies, and I'm not saying that there aren't at least another 200 that we could talk about, but there's something to be said for like, hey, when we come back, it could be a nice little like, boom, we did this one episode with a good guest.
And you know, a little wizard behind the curtain is that it's just, this is, Rotten Tomatoes is sort of an organism, and it evolves and it changes and it has different areas that it wants to go into. And so, you know, we're not going anywhere necessarily, but it's just a matter of what's next. And I think it's going to be exciting, like, to see what you guys are doing with the award show podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever the next thing that I get to do here, like, I love doing On the Street, where Christian Rubalcaba is the producer of that show. And it's like, and it's just really fun to get to do different types of things, all within the sort of, you know, realm of cinema, and getting to celebrate it, but also getting to do what I love doing with it, which is laughing a little bit. You know, Jack, when you get to talk award show and you get to go to all these cool places, and Brian is just there. He's along for the ride, and he's a great sport about it. But you also are great at sort of keeping us on our P's and Q's when we need it. You have a great producerial touch, because I know when you need to get things done, but it's never in like, you're never mean about it. You're never disciplinarian about it. Yeah. Yet you somehow get the job done and get us here on time.
Yeah, you guys are my children. And when we start the show, I'm like, you guys, get your energy out.
Get your little giggles
out of the way. I'm not recording anything. And then,
none
like,
of that is inaccurate.
Settle down.
We can use this last 5 minutes to just vent if you want to.
No, it's been fun. It's been
another time.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, this is like a dream come true. Like, I started podcasting like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
same. And like creating my own podcast. And like, who would have thought like I would join a corporation like in the world of podcasting? Like, 10 years ago, it was like, what is a podcast? And now it's like, these huge companies want to create that. I'm like, I know how to do that. Like, oh, you can pay me to do that and to talk about movies. Like, I've loved movies all my life. So like, to get to hang out with you guys, my friends, and to just like talk about movies and laugh about it, like, holy crap, like, that's a cool living.
And we did some pretty impressive things in terms of numbers, in terms of stats and all that stuff. I mean, we have two episodes that are right hovering around 500,000 views. Yeah. On YouTube. That's Twilight, and we did an episode on the Scream franchise.
Yep.
Avatar, Suicide Squad, the M. Night Shyamalan movie filmography with Alex Wolff. That's another one of the all-time most viewed ones. And then you look at episode one, the very first episode that went live as the podcast, was Spider-Man 3, which is a great movie to kick off with. Yep. And we could not ask for a better guest than Roxy Stryer on that episode. The first episode that went live on YouTube was Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. We had Kalinowski in, and Mike Kalinowski, I mean, you talk about a guy who just knows everything.
And built for video. Like, that was a face we needed to put on
that
video.
That was the legitimate face of our empire. And Brian's very first episode that you edited was Mortal Kombat with Brian Tong.
Yeah.
And that was Mortal Kombat. I believe that was the original Mortal Kombat.
No, the 2021 version.
That was the 2021 version.
Oh, yeah, that was the one with Louis Tan. Yeah, we talked it already.
With Brian. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, we'd already talked about that one.
Yeah, you guys covered the original, which I wish I was there for, because I grew up on the original Mortal Kombat and even Annihilation. Like, I haven't seen it in a while.
I'm an Annihilation defender.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got to rewatch it, but I freaking love those movies.
You didn't mention this one, too, because this is a dual medium podcast. We have video, we have audio. I do love that a more recent episode, being the Dune episode, did so well audio-wise. Mm-hmm. So many people listened to that one, and so many people listened to the Eternals episode. A lot of people queued up the Eternals when that one came out.
Yeah, and then Brian and I got to go to the American Cinematheque, and then we got to introduce Dune 1984
that was
as
cool.
part of the festival, and that was like, that's all from this podcast. And it's just, it's a really cool thing. And there's a couple like directors that I know that I'm a fan of. They were just, I didn't know they were there that night. They were in the audience, like just because they wanted to go see Dune again.
Oh, wow.
And I heard from them. It's like, and it was just a really cool thing. It's a small world, this movie community, but it's a huge world and it's a big undertaking. And you could not ask for a better lineage of talent behind the scenes that we had here. And for Brian to help us pull this train into station finally, it's you're one of one, sir. You're truly unique in your talents, and it could not have done this show without you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
So, what nice things do you have to say about us?
You guys are great whenever you're focused and paying attention. And
so 30% of the time we're okay.
No, I mean, listen, there's a lot of squirrel that happens in this podcast, but we know y'all listen for that. Also, I will shout out to Most, again, podcasts don't make it past 4 episodes. We made it to almost 4 years. We still have, I think, great ratings on pretty much every single service that we've been a part of. The number of people that have reached out since the podcast has been ending, I've gotten a lot of DMs, a lot of texts being like, oh my God, I'm sad you guys are leaving, but I'll know I'll listen to something else. And we got a lot of last minute emails. Mark, do you want to read any of these ones?
Yeah, so this one is, this is Adam D. from England. And he says, hi, Mark, Jacqueline, and Tim. He says, having picked up my jaw from the floor after your announcement at the end of the last episode, I decided to send you the question I've been meaning to write for at least the last 2 years. RT is wrong seems to be focused on the idea of what terrible film do you actually like and why. My question wants to flip that on its head. Which highly regarded film by both critics and audiences do you actively dislike?
Critics and audiences.
Yeah, so it's got to be a double roses for them and a double whammy for us. Is there a movie that comes to mind that everybody just seems to be fawning over and you're just not feeling it?
Midsommar. I don't know what the audience rating on that one is, but Midsommar for me
was not your thing.
I'll do some research.
No. And I think it's got a fairly high audience rating as well.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. It's still divisive though. Yeah.
83% certified fresh and 63%
audience
score.
So it's got a little
score.
Bit audience score is a little bit, but I just don't dig that movie. Yeah. Like, I don't want to say hate because it is an art form and a lot of people put a lot of work into it. There's some performances in that are nice. but I could have done without that entire movie. I also could have done without that movie justifying that brand of cinema, which I think needs to just...
Which is still going.
Yeah, and it needs to go away.
Yeah.
In my opinion, again, that is my And the score of the critic score of this one is low, but it was also still pretty beloved and it won a ton of Oscars. So I don't know if you could say that that's the case, but like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That one, I could yeet it into the sun and we would be all right.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that one
Rami.
Was like,
sorry, Rami.
His performance is great. I feel like others, I'm saying.
His performance was what it needed to be to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
Sorry,
there
I
were
feel
other better ones.
Like Bradley Cooper lost for A Star Is Born that same year. Was that same year, I think?
Sounds right.
Yeah, he lost for A Star Is Born because he was all up in his director's bag. Mm. But he actually did sing. He sung live. And then he did everything he did for Maestro. The idea that both Maestro and A Star Is Born didn't give Bradley Cooper an Oscar, but Bohemian Rhapsody got Rami Malek one. I think that dude talks about that in therapy.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I would.
To this day.
I'm nothing against Rami Malek. I would just be talking about that in therapy. I would.
I have a movie that I agree with the audience more, and I don't even agree. I can't even get to where the audience is with it. This movie's 93% certified fresh with critics, 79% on the audience score. And it's a movie that I appreciate, and I actually was really into this movie for a while, and it just lost me. I felt like maybe it's me. Maybe I need to rewatch it, but Drive with Ryan Gosling.
I thought it started out so damn hot
and it was so strong, and then it just kind of keeps fizzling out for me. And I thought Albert Brooks was great in it. I thought Gosling was great. I cannot get into
the last bit.
I just can't do it. And so that's your movie for me, Adam. But again, I think that what this show has taught me is that if I truly dislike a movie, maybe some of it is me, and I need to go back and just be honest with it. Because there's movies I just know I'm never going to get into. Anna Karenina is a movie. There's been a bunch of versions. There's one with Jude Law and Keira Knightley, and I sat there, and I was maybe a little hungover when I went to the screening, and I hated every second of being there. It felt like homework. It's barely fresh with critics. The audience is 50%. It's just one of those, and it's not for me. I get it, and everybody can have it. If you love the book, maybe you're going to love the movie. It's not for me.
There's some Oscar movies that are like that, where I'm like, it's so beloved, and it won Best Picture, Best Director, whatever. Like The Power of the Dog wasn't for me.
I tried
watching it. Everyone's like, this is the greatest thing. This is so well directed. And I was like, I was kind of bored. But again, it's probably me saying like, hey, like, let's get some action in there. Like some jokes in there.
Some people probably said the same thing. I liked The Power of the Dog. I was okay that it lost.
Yeah, but it won direction.
It did win direction, yeah.
Which I don't remember others that were nominated that year. But I feel like also, like, to go back to the question, it's not as fun to just hate on a movie. Like, you're saying, like, maybe it's me.
Could be.
You don't want to say, hey, like, everyone loves this movie. It's so beloved. Let me just, like, crap all over it. Like, I feel like that doesn't make for a fun episode. It's more of like, let's defend Teen Witch.
Yeah.
Or let's defend these movies that we love movies we grew up with. And now we're like, we understand it's not great, but it's still so fun.
And it'll be interesting to see what those movies of today end up being. Like, what movies of today that we've dismissed end up being the ones that, like, really hit with a different generation. I mean, something like Super Mario Brothers is probably going to be a movie like that. Like, the new one, the animated
one. It's rotten.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's rotten, and it's going to move forward. I think the other part of this, too, is you're right. It's not just about bashing movies and being like, hey, this one sucks. It is about sort of the conversation, but I like that we're having the conversation. That's like the best part, is the fact that we actually want to sit and say, hey, why did you dig this? Why didn't I dig this? And sort of examining that in a different way.
Yeah, the fact that we got to have the conversation, and the fact that all of you loyal listeners and viewers out there got to be a part of that, because it's one thing just to argue with somebody you've never met before online about a movie and yelling at each other, and you lose a lot in that context. But here, just to have a full-on, fleshed-out, well-produced, structured, organized conversation that can also be freewheeling and you know, loose and go in a lot of different tangents and stuff like that, it's been such a rewarding journey for me. And I think that, if anything, what I hope the legacy of this podcast would be is to let people know that you can have a difference of opinion and you can still laugh about it and you can still find some common ground and maybe say, you know what, maybe part of it is me and I should go back and kind of revisit what this thing is we're talking about.
And maybe your opinion can change, because there's definitely been movies that, like, the conversation and maybe going back to it did change my opinion.
Because if Rotten Tomatoes can be wrong,
then I can be wrong, too. We gotta go.
We just came up with a great
way.
We gotta wrap up.
Yeah. It took us 165 episodes to make it that good.
Well, a lot of great guests over the years. But we had Winston A. Marshall's number 10.
Yeah.
He had 10 appearances.
No, he was number one in the list of...
he had 10 appearances. He's number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Roxy right there on his heels, 9 appearances. Jay Washington and Dreen Arellano tied for 7 apiece. So a lot of great returning guests, a lot of great celebs. And Brian, I guess I'll give you the first of the final words here.
I've said it all, pretty much. Thank you guys so much. I will say you guys are the best. Mark, you're so talented in what you do, and your stand-up, you're hilarious. Jacqueline, your movie knowledge is just amazing. and your work ethic, your work ethic too, Mark.
When it needs to be there, it's there.
When it's there. I mean, let's be real. It's also there on my knowledge. When it needs to be when there.
When it needs to be there.
When you plug me in, I work just fine.
But no, this is a dream job and I'm so happy I get to do it every day. And thank you guys for being a part of it.
Couldn't have done it without you, my man.
Same. Listen, what I've said enough. Even joking about that. I've said enough on this podcast. I want to thank you, Mark, for just again being a great person to go through this journey with. It's I would not have wanted to do it with anyone else. I could not and would not have done it with anyone else. You're really a joy to work with, and anyone that works with you understands that, which is one of the reasons why when you put up the bat signal, people came and showed up. So
I, you know, I'd like to thank me as well, because I really was. And the only reason I have to give myself my flowers is because after listening to so many episodes of this podcast, my mom's favorite host is Jacqueline. And so she asked me how Jacqueline's doing
before she
hears Jacqueline on NPR all the time. And she's like, well, you know, Jacqueline, she's just so smart and she just knows so much about movies. And I'm like, Mom, did you still have my Return of the Jedi collectible glasses? So,
I'm on the show too, Mom.
There's nobody else that I think could have pulled off this podcast other than Jacqueline Coley. There's a reason why she is so talented and successful and gets to jet set all over the world and interview the biggest stars on planet Earth, because she is one of them. You are one of one, and I'm just a dude who was lucky enough to sit across from you and talk movies. So for the entire gang here, in front of the cameras, behind the scenes, the entire staff here at RT Is Wrong, from graphics and everybody else who has contributed and pitched into this show, thank you from the bottom of my heart, from the bottom of Jacqueline's heart, to all of you and to all the fans out here who kept this show running for so long. And we get to leave on our own terms, and we may come back and visit y'all from time to time. So
yeah.
I'll leave you with a quote from a movie that I love using for any big life event or any minor life change. It always fits. This movie's 82% certified fresh on the tomato meter from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And it's the quote that y'all know. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you might miss it.